B2. Number 26B.
Mrs. Eddy was quite disturbed at that time, but she didn't intervene into that Kimball controversy. And looking back now to all this reasoning which we have been doing, looking back to all that went on between Kimballites and anti-Kimballites, or Kimballites and Hannahites, and so on, one wonders, why didn't they go back to the textbook and ask the textbook? Because the textbook didn't say anything of all of what these people said. They had no spiritual the textbook, there are no spiritual organs, there is not an idea of liver and of heart, there is not an idea hinting to the idea of heart and so on. There, everything is mind and mind's ideas. But in the development, this must have been a transitionary stage, and the right transitionary stage, and this naturally just made the whole consciousness in the movement ready for something higher. Even when one asks what Mrs. Eddy thought about her own healings, one is quite surprised to find quite a few statements which are astonishing. For instance, she said in 1903, she said, "When I first came to Christian Science, I was lifted right out of the belief of sickness into the belief of perfect health. Since then, I'm working out of that belief in health into the science of health." Even for her, she had to work out of the belief of health into the science of health. And she says that it takes all her endeavors. In 1904, she says, "I used to heal with a word. I knew no more how it was done than a baby. Only it was done every time. I never failed. Almost always in one treatment, never more than three. Now," that is 1904, "now God is showing me how, and I'm showing you." Can you see that that first decade of this century was the great overturning out of the belief of health into the science of health? And so, in many ways, Mrs. Eddy acknowledges to herself how she has to get a clear sense of the science. In summer 1910, just about 6 months before Mrs. Eddy left us, she made the following remark, "I feel I'm just really beginning to understand science and health." She wrote science and health as a transparent window pane, so to say. And then she had to learn it herself. And then she had to find it out herself. And only 6 months before she left, she said, "Now I'm slowly beginning to understand science and health." So we don't need to be discouraged if we don't understand science and health at once. You can see that this is a development, a spiritual development that takes energies, that takes love, and that takes somehow time. And it is in that period of those last few months that she dictated Principle and Practice, where she warned the movement not to rest on belief. That belief is dangerous to the movement, that if Christian Science is only taken as a belief, it will go lost again. And only if we will understand science as a science, it can survive. This was one of her last letters she wrote. And then she left us. And the idea pushes on. No matter if Mrs. Eddy is here or not, the Christ idea is eternal, as we have seen. The Christ idea pushes on. Christ idea is impersonal. It will always use that channel which is transparent for the next step. And so we have the great next step, which is called more or less the Kimball and the Bicknell Young period and the Young teaching. Mr. Dolly was a pupil of Bicknell Young. They were good friends, and he told us that one day, round about 1915, he was preparing for his class, John Dolly, and that he came across that statement in recapitulation that principle and idea is one, and so he felt, well, that there is only one being. And it impressed him tremendously, because 5 years before he went through the teacher's class, in 1910 he went through the teacher's class, and nothing was said about being one. He said all the teaching in the teacher's class was about how ideas rule illusions and human beliefs. What was the connection between ideas and human beliefs? That was the Kimball Young teaching up to that point. And so suddenly he began to see that being is one. And so the next time he saw Bicknell Young, he said to Bicknell Young, "You know, Bicknell, being is one. There is only one being, that all the beings there is." And so apparently Bicknell Young, and Dolly said to him, "Why didn't you teach us that?" And so Bicknell Young, with a smile, said, "Why didn't I? We didn't know." But he knew it at that time. It was one of those occasions, again, which we see all over the world, that if an idea is ripe, it springs up independently of one another at different places. And so Bicknell Young and John Dolly began to see at that time, round about 1915, that being is one. And Bicknell Young spent, so to say, his whole life up to 1940 in teaching and lecturing on the oneness of being. This was now his theme, to show that there is only one being, that principle and idea is one, that therefore there is only one universe, a spiritual universe, one mind, and so on. And so his teaching mainly consisted of this. He could see that there is one being, therefore that evil is neither person, place, nor thing. He made it as a nothing. That he could see that the material universe is only the spiritual universe misunderstood, misinterpreted, his great point now laid on misunderstanding, misinterpretation, and would show that the whole gamut of evil is nothing else but good misunderstood, good misinterpreted. So he began to show that the divine principle must interpret the universe. This is one of his pet statements from the textbook. The divine principle of the universe must interpret the universe. You see, he went now out from the divine, its objective. He did no more now go out so much, I will show you, so much from the material universe with all its belief and trying to find the right idea. He now went out from principle and looked at the universe from the point of view of principle and interpreting the universe from principle, and therefore seeing a perfect universe. Matter was for him just spirit misunderstood, or as he taught it in his last teacher's class in 1936, that matter is a perishable concept of the imperishable. It's always misinterpretation, every belief. So he laid a great stress on showing really that there is only one ego, one being, one I. When one reads the class notes and notes of his association from round about 1918-20, the whole accent shifts on there is one I, one being, one ego, only one man, one universe, all always at oneness. And this is what he taught, and therefore, naturally, his method of healing was now quite different from that of the Kimball period. His method of healing, if I just summarize it quickly, was going out that there is only one mind, Therefore, there is not the mind of the practitioner and the mind of the patient. There is just one mind. See, we had at the beginning that addressing thought, therefore addressing where the mind of the practitioner was addressing the mind of the patient. Then we had that period of impersonal treatment, physician heal thyself, where it says the practitioner has to get right in his own mind. And now Bicknell Young lifts it right out of these minds and says there is a divine mind, and all that there is going on in healing is going on in that divine mind. Can you see it's an enormous step forward which has taken place around about 1920 when he began to teach this one mind. And so he said, and we have the mind of Christ. And only with that mind of Christ, because there is one ego, we have a mind of Christ, and from that point of view we can heal. Therefore, healing consists of getting out of the way. And from that point, one was taking that statement from Mrs. Eddy, where she said, I could heal by putting Mary out of the way. That pet sentence came now en vogue and showed that the healing is not taking place in the practitioner's mind nor in the patient's mind, but that divine mind is whole, and therefore being aware of that one mind is really healing. They called now the whole atmosphere fear God being, and the rule which they used was be, and by being heal the sick. See, it's now a higher sense. Instead of thinking, it's now consciousness, being. And so Bicknell Young taught be, and with be naturally meant to be the God being. By being God being, you heal the sick. A very higher, quite a wonderful sense of treatment. So he made a great point out of this by saying healing is not trying to improve an imperfect statement. It's not improvement. Healing really is revealing that everything is healed. For instance, Margaret Laird, who is a great Bicknell Young student, says Christian Science does not heal men, but reveals him as healed. Can you see it's a finer, more transparent way of healing? Well, that healing which is rested on the consciousness of the one mind and being that one mind, therefore by being God being, we heal the sick. All right, that's very abbreviated, showing Bicknell Young teaching. And therefore, what was his method of, and the method of healing? It sounds wonderful, and the present young students, like Margaret Laird, like Corey and so on, they still stand on that level. And it's a wonderful level, and a high level. But is it right? Aren't there quite a few flaws in it too? And there are. There are quite a few flaws in it. What are they? For instance, he shows that all manifestations are a manifestation of the Infinite One. He had the Infinite One and its infinite manifestations, but he never talked what these manifestations are. He didn't therefore show that these manifestations are ideas, and what ideas are, and in which way ideas are distinguished from illusions. And therefore that whole teaching, it becomes a dangerous teaching, because you just say there is only the Infinite One going on, and that's the only being that is going on. But if we do not know what are ideas and illusions, we take everything going on as being right, as idea. See, that's the danger. That it can become a great sense of dualism, which is just covered up with a very wonderful sugar crust, you say, which says all is fine. And that's naturally the danger of all those one being groups which one has all over the place, because there is no science in it. That one being which he taught, he didn't teach in classifications. He never showed what the classifications are. He showed that the divine principle interprets the universe, but he didn't say what is the science of this interpretation. Interpretation means that you have categories and classifications and structures and laws and orders. This is unknown to the young teaching, completely unknown to the young teaching. Therefore, they still, in a way, had to go out from evil. If you read Margaret Laird's book on Christian Science Re-Explored, which, by the way, is a very inspired book. I like it. I'm not going to criticize Margaret Laird. I'm investigating the science. There you will find that she takes all these beliefs and just makes it as a no, because there is no duality. She takes lack and says lack is no lack. She puts no hyphen lack. Because there is only one, you can't have lack. Therefore lack is a no lack. Well, what's the use of it? What's the use of it? Either we have to see what is a right interpretation, what is a wrong interpretation, classify them and not be afraid of saying to something, this is wrong and this is evil, as long as we don't make a reality of evil, and as long as we see it as a counterfeit of good. So only really a scientific interpretation of this principle can really bring light into the universe. Therefore, the young teaching says oneness is science, and science is oneness. That's their great point. They say only when we have oneness, we have science, and therefore science is oneness. Well, that's not true, because the very definition of science is that you break up the one. The very definition of science is that you take the one truth and break it up into laws and systems and orders and classifications. That just that is the point of view of science. And therefore they call oneness science, instead of seeing that there is a science of oneness. Well, these are, so to say, the main flaws in it. And therefore, as one began to realize these flaws, one could correct them. And so I come to the next important step in the development of the idea, and that's what we call the Dorley teaching. As I have said you before, Dorley and Bicknell Young, so to say, at the same time have begun to see that being is one. And actually, John Dorley began to teach the oneness of being too, but he didn't put the accent so much on oneness. Though his class notes of that time are full of these wonderful statements, you know, that God is conscious of his ideas, and by being conscious of the ideas are conscious of themselves, and therefore they are conscious of God, like this. It was full of these statements of the oneness. But he didn't really accentuate too much, because a year after he had seen that being is one, he put the right question. That's always the great thing. Can we put the right question? He put the right question, namely he said, if being is one, and that one has a science, what is the science of this oneness? And so his main interest was shifted right from 1916 onwards to the investigation, what is the science of oneness? Instead of just saying oneness is science and science is oneness. He said, what is science? And therefore tried to see orders in this oneness. And he began to see right away a certain order of the days of creation as a sevenfold order. Then he began to see that sevenfold order in the Beatitudes, in the Lord's Prayer. He began to see that the third degree, you know, just about what we have been doing at the beginning of this week, and he began to see more and more that order until finally in 1936 he began to see that these days of creation are numerals of infinity. He wrote an article in the journal on the numerals of infinity which raised hell, and from that point on he got into disrepute in Boston. And that developed, as we know, always in higher classifications, then seeing that these numerals of infinity correspond with the seven synonymous term, then we began to see the seven synonymous term reflecting each other, the four, that the four times four, the four times seven, the seven times seven, and so on, what we did up to now. And all that what we did up to now was really to investigate oneness in its categories, in its structure. And not just taking all is one, and therefore death is no death, and therefore lack is no death, and therefore disease is no disease. It begins now to bring light into that oneness, and this is Mr. Dawley's great contribution. He begins now to see that in order to have categories, you must split up that infinite one through the prism, so to say, into the seven synonymous terms, then asking how do these synonymous terms express themselves through ideas. But he wasn't satisfied by saying mind expresses itself in ideas. He said, what are these ideas? And so we began to study in the textbook those seven synonymous terms and find out the ideas. Finding out the ideas, we will find out the counterfeits of them, everything that was the counterfeit of ideas. And in this way got a standard of ideas and a standard, so to say, of beliefs or of illusions. And so he found in this way the answer to where Kimball started. He started right away in around about 1900 with saying principle must be understood through its ideas, but he didn't explain it. And so 40 years later, John Dawley came and could explain and said, yes, Kimball was right, but he didn't know how to explain it. So John Dawley's teaching was based on Kimball's teaching, on Young's teaching very much. I have Kimball's teaching, his teacher's class of 1900, I think, or 1901, I have them, the whole teaching has given to me in the handwriting of Professor Herring, and that teaching is what I got in Mr. Dawley's class, fundamentally. But Mr. Dawley extended it, you see, he extended it and said, that teaching was all right, but if it doesn't lead further, it can be misunderstood. And so he showed now this the being as a realm of ideas, with classification, with ideas, and so on. And so he said, therefore, being is that infinite being which expresses itself in ideas. These ideas begin to analyze, uncover, and annihilate the beliefs. So he took that statement from Mrs. Eddy, where she says, Christian Science has been revealed to me as one intelligence, analyzing, uncovering, and annihilating the testimony of the material sense, or something like that, you see. And he put great stress that, therefore, as we culture our consciousness in the synonymous terms, with the ideas of synonymous terms, that this would act as that intelligence which would analyze, uncover, and annihilate the beliefs. That is mind reading, immortal mind reading. Therefore, he would in this way be able to give the right diagnosis. See, finally, with Mr. Dawley's teaching, we arrive at a scientific method of diagnosis. We are no more taking the diagnosis of the body or of the patient's belief about his body and says, I have a liver disease, even if he hasn't it. We don't take the medical science diagnosis because we say, even if that diagnosis is right, it's only the effect but not the belief ruling it. What we have to diagnose is the belief behind it. And what can diagnose the belief behind it is only the divine mind that knows all. That divine mind which is the great intelligence analyzing, uncovering, and destroying the belief. And so he began to teach completely new method of practice, you see, which would go out from mind, just as Bichnor Young, would go out from mind and see everything is a realm of ideas, just as Bichnor Young. But he would go further and say, what are these ideas? We can't be conscious of it. That Young, neither Kimmel nor Young could show. And therefore, seeing that these ideas have their impact on the human, on the mental false level, and therefore bring from undercover everything which is wrong. Just as a trained and cultured musical sense brings from undercover and can detect clearly what is the wrong sense, what is the mistake, what is the disharmony and the wrong tone that is played. So, in this way, he had even also in this respect a higher impact, because that method never tried to heal the disease, always tried to heal the belief which produced the disease. And in that way did not only bring about a physical harmony, but a spiritual harmony. Didn't only heal the body, but the man. So that more and more the whole practice is shifted over to the interest, how do we demonstrate spiritual man, and not just how do we demonstrate physical harmony. It's a demonstration of spiritual harmony. And I think this is the future of Christian Science, to demonstrate spiritual harmony and not so much physical harmony, because the medical science does much better in most cases than Christian Science treatment. You know, we tell each other of a wonderful healing, you know, and say, I have heard that some years ago through Christian Science treatment we had a wonderful healing. That's fine. Nothing to say against it. But in a hospital, they heal them by the thousands. Infectious disease, some shots, and so on. Syphilis and all that, which is quite a, which was at one time anyway, at Mrs. Eddy's time, all these infectious disease which could not be cured today, a few shots, you don't even have to go to be in bed, you just go to the doctor and a few shots, isn't it? Roundabout. It's an easy thing now. Well, all right, but we must see what medicine does is to heal the body. But what the future of Christian Science is to heal man, to give him a spiritual concept of being and to demonstrate spiritual man. Naturally, in the measure as our study is engaged much more and focused much more on spiritual being, naturally we cultural consciousness which cannot, as Mrs. Eddy said, we come then to absolute Christian Science, which cannot sin, which cannot be diseased. As long as the interest of Christian Science is focused on healing, we ask for sickness. We ask for sickness. Therefore, the raison d'être, as the French would say, see, the raison d'être for Christian Science as it is used today is that people get sick. What is the raison d'être of Christian Science if people don't get sick? Then Christian Science would no more be necessary. So the raison d'etre of Christian Science is much bigger than that, namely to give us a consciousness of wholeness without becoming sick. The preventive art of Christian Science, that science which prevents disease, that science which handles latent error, and not only concrete error, but latent error. And then there is really a great scope, because no other branch or no other sector of the whole world, the interest of the whole world, is seeing that and gives an answer for that. For physical healing we have all sorts of things, but for spiritual being Christian Science stands unique, quite unique. All the rest is concentrated on how to have spiritual dominion or mental dominion over the body. Whereas the pith of Christian Science is to be spiritual and to have a spiritual universe and a spiritual consciousness which cannot be touched by human beliefs.